Everything But the Kitchen Sink, special episode today, very special episode. Today is kind of a double podcast. We'll be putting this podcast up on not only Everything But the Kitchen Sink as you're listening to it, but it'll also be up on the JohnCast, which is John Jorgensen's podcast as well. So you might be listening on the JohnCast or on Everything But the Kitchen Sink. Doesn't matter. So excited for today. We're talking Mother, the movie that came out. Very controversial, very polarizing film. So first we're going to go through the plot of it, and then we're going to talk our instant reactions to the film itself, while also talking about the metaphors, things like that working, and our thoughts on those. It's a really good time. We have some fun with it. And if you haven't seen the movie, I really recommend watching it before you listen to this podcast, because we're going to spoil everything, obviously. And also, you should watch it because I think it's a really good film. I know there's two strong camps on it, but I think it's a very, very good film. So it's worth your time. Check it out. And then maybe come back and listen afterwards. Bookmark this podcast. Come back to it later. That's fine. This doesn't matter when. Maybe it's a year from now and you're listening to it. That's fun. And let's get at it. Cue the music. So we're here.
We're here.
We did it.
We did it.
This film requires a whole podcast. I knew pretty quickly into watching it that this thing just would need a whole podcast.
It's an extremely controversial film.
Is it controversial?
It is.
Is it polarizing?
I think it's both. Like, they are literally marketing it as a polarizing / controversial. Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, true. I would think, well, polarizing, like, I don't think Avatar is controversial, but Avatar is very polarizing because people are on either side of it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think this is definitely, but I think anything that is controversial is polarizing, but not everything that's polarizing is controversial.
For sure, and especially with something that a lot of people really love and think is good, mm-hmm. and a lot of people hate.
it just takes several very large issues and talks about them in a very loud way.
Yeah.
That a lot of people are you would be hard pressed to find a single person in the world that is not very passionate about at least one of the issues that are discussed in this film. And so for that reason, I think it's very controversial.
Yes.
They're literally have you seen the commercial where it's like,
I've seen no commercials for this except for the previews that I saw in theaters for it for one movie, and then it also came out a lot faster than I thought, because the first trailer I saw for it was in August, and then next thing you know it was out in September, and I thought it was going to be out more in November, December. I also thought it would be a lot more of an awards bait film or an award circuit, but I think they kind of abandoned ship on that pretty quick.
Yeah. The first time I heard about it was I was running, and I ran past an advertisement at a bus stop, and it just says Mother, and it's just a picture of, like, the house from a distance. I was like, is Darren Aronofsky doing, like, a Mother, Courage and Her Children remake?
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I knew very little about the film. But now they're advertising it literally as audiences just can't agree on Mother.
Oh, really?
And then they show one review that's, like, the best movie of the year. And then the other one is, like no other movie you'll ever see. It's so strange. And another one's like, what do I even say?
Yeah. That's surprising for me. I'm trying to think if another movie has done that.
No, it's like purposefully showing you somewhat negative reviews.
I wish Tree of Life had done that. I think I would have liked Tree of Life more if it was like Tree of Life. You might hate it more than anything in your life, or you might think it's the most beautiful thing of all time.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of one of those movies in a way, probably. But anyway. Man.
The dinosaur sequence in Tree of Life. That was the turning
point. You
know
I had to leave Tree of Life?
You know our power went out during Tree of Life.
Really?
In the theater. Yeah.
I had to walk out because I can't do movies that are very handheld and shaky in theaters. Like Hunger Games, walked out.
Oh, no way.
I have to say, I didn't walk out for good, but I take like a 20-minute break because I get very nauseous and sick. Yeah.
You know what was the first handheld movie? I mean, Cloverfield is the most memorable one.
Yeah, that was a tough one, too.
Was insane. But before that, Behind Enemy Lines with Owen Wilson
was
one of the first, like, where every shot of him running is like shaky camera that I can remember, that I remember being like, wow, that's an effect. You feel like you're running with
him.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But Tree of Life, I was with your mother-in-law.
Oh, really?
And
did we see it together?
No, I don't think so. I was with...
that's odd.
I was with Maureen, and I think Aaron was there as well.
No, we definitely saw it
did
together
Did we see
then.
It together?
Yes.
The power went out.
I don't remember it because I think I was already out of the theater.
Wow.
But we did Insanity that day.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure we did Insanity together.
Well,
because that I thought that was one... Because it was the first movie I really had to walk out of because I got so sick. And I think I thought it was because I had done Insanity that day.
Ah. Well, the power went out right at the dinosaur scene.
Oh, yeah,
which
I missed it.
Which was a crazy time because at that point you're like, what's going on?
What is even happening?
But this isn't a Tree of Life podcast.
No,
this is a mother podcast.
Mother.
Spoilers are coming. Here with John Jorgensen.
Hi.
And Jimmy Nicholas. Yeah, depending on...
Spoilers are coming.
So,
see the movie first.
Yeah, so we're talking about Mother. Please see the movie. But it also don't see the movie. Don't see the movie if you really react strongly to graphic violence. If you're very young.
If you're pregnant.
Like, if you're pregnant.
Do not see this movie.
But yeah, like, don't, you know, save it for another time in your life or just don't. Like,
yeah.
I was talking to a friend the other day. I started to describe it and she said, I'm out. And
yeah.
I said, that's totally fine.
It's not an easy
one. I'm not
going to
think less
of
you.
One.
But it is, there's a lot to talk about. So let's start. I want to go through it. Let's go through the plot of it.
Yeah.
And kind of, we both didn't read or like, I knew very little going
yeah.
in besides that it was, you know, polarizing and
controversial. I knew it was polarizing and I had listened to one interview with Darren Aronofsky beforehand in which for 15 minutes they talk about the film, but only really the way it's shot, which
yeah.
I can't wait to talk about some of those secrets that I learned.
Okay, so it starts. Mother, weirdest exclamation point sound effect of all time.
Yes.
When the title scribbles out and the exclamation point. Never really came back into play for me, but I really was like, who made that decision?
My wife was obsessed with the font.
Of the oh yeah, very very calligraphy.
Mother, non-capital, non-capitalized.
Mother. Very, see details already. So in the first second, when you get it goes right into a burning image with a woman's face and clearly a fire, and then it shows Javier Bardem's face. He's putting in a stone, which comes into significance later, into a holder. Now
and
I want to stop there.
Is like burning on the inside.
Yes, I want to stop right there. So at that exact moment. I pieced together that we were entering into some sort of ritual, some sort of repeating ritual. I didn't know what
really?
Else.
Really? You got that it was a repeating
immediately,
thing.
Because I said,
wow.
That's not Jennifer Lawrence.
That's
and whoever
good.
That is, Jennifer Lawrence is now in place of.
Wow.
I know. I was explaining this to Aaron. I immediately said to myself, that's because I had to look at that person for a second, and it was purposefully a person who looked kind of like her but isn't her. And I'm a
really
J-Law fan, so I can pick her out like nobody's business. And I said, that's not her. So I said, and now we'll get into this later, but I immediately thought, my first thought was Javier Bardem is either some sort of a killer or a mythical being or something. And this is a ritual or like a wizard or witch or something
gotcha.
Like that. And we're entering into some sort of ritual that involves this stone.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought definitely the stone has a lot of significance.
Oh, yeah.
You immediately know that because it sets it up. And especially because then when it goes to burnt and it comes the house then moving forward, it shows a burnt house and then the house immediately becomes transforms into
you see it sort of regrow
into normal, right. So
like the burnt ash gives way to the regular wood floor.
Right.
You see it sort of melt away backwards.
And we're introduced to Jennifer Lawrence's character waking up in a bed. Now, when the house transformed, I immediately thought that was when I was officially like, this is a ritual. This is some sort of thing that we are now going from the ending of something, cycling back to the beginning. Now, I had no idea other than that.
Did you have a feeling that's where we were going to end in the movie as well?
Well, of course. It's like a gun.
I
don't remember what professor said this, but it's like if you put a gun on a table in a play, you
yeah.
have everyone was waiting for you to shoot the gun.
Yeah, you got
to. So
pick
if
up
you
gun.
Start with a fire, at some point
you got to return to it.
You got to go back, and everything's got to burn down.
And that's what's interesting, though, because then you're like, when and how, and it's the journey of
kinda
how
gives
we get
you the
there.
Ending before.
Right. And the whole play, they're talking about how much, you know, his house was burnt down, and he has all this, and she has all this stake in the house. So moving forward, she's taking care of the house.
Yep.
There's a lot of distance between them. The Javier Bardem is a writer. They've come to this sanctuary. It wasn't clear if this was his childhood home or if he
was
an adult.
That it burnt down.
Yeah, that part was very ambiguous. Clearly some distance between them as people. And they do a good job of establishing that every inch of this house has been scrutinized over by her.
Yeah, she has renovated the house and basically rebuilt it after it burned down.
Stone for stone to what it was. Which is incredible, just like as a preface of what this means to her for the hours, you know, almost the 10,000 hours.
And she does it because she wanted to create this environment from which he could do his work.
Right.
It's clear that his work is very important work.
And that it's like how she could contribute to the work as well.
And he is blocked.
Yeah.
Which is
very much in writer's block. And such a good premise. Immediately I was there. Then you have, obviously, the stranger who arrives. And in that way...
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris. In that way, it immediately feels like a play.
Yes.
You have a set stage.
It'd be a great play.
Ed Harris comes in, and he comes in as a stranger. Now, as a film, I was on the edge of my seat for this first 30 minutes and 45 minutes.
Absolutely.
Because I also did not know, essentially, how much they were going to be scaring me.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch horror movies, I hide under my clothing.
I think a lot of people walked into it thinking it was more of a horror film.
Right. Even though I knew it was going to get crazy and heady, I was still waiting for the jumps and the scares, which there were some. It had some moments. But I was incredibly engaged.
Yeah, but I just didn't know what world I was in
at all
for a while.
So Ed Harris arrives. And he is a stranger. He thinks it's a bed and breakfast, he proclaims. And Javier Bardem is very welcoming to him, takes him in.
He's supposedly a doctor that is going to work at the hospital, right?
Or something. Right. But he's in town. He's do that. He is also very sick. You kind of get that he's got a coughing, he's a smoker, all this stuff. Jennifer Lawrence does not want him there.
No.
But Javier Bardem is very welcoming to him.
Immediately, he's like, come on into my house, which was very strange.
Yeah. And then immediately we find out that Ed Harris is a huge fan of his work, and he shows him the stone, tells the story about how the stone is the only thing that was left from the last fire, finding out more about this world, which is interesting. Then the night sequence. This was interesting. So the middle of the night sequence of waking up and finding Ed Harris in the bathroom throwing up with the scar on his body. Very interesting. And I never felt like it was fully explained.
Do you see where the scar was?
No, I just
saw... It was on his rib. And who shows up the next morning?
Oh,
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Which gets into the symbolism
of the movie. Air pointed that out to me.
Wow.
Yeah. Really smart.
And he's throwing up.
He's throwing up.
A ton. And then he...
And Javier Bardem is with him.
And the next morning they pretend like nothing happened.
Yep. Pretend like nothing happened. And who shows up at the door? Michelle Pfeiffer. Pretty good, huh?
And then they're immediately having sex the next day, too.
Crazy, right?
Like, and then, wow. Okay, well, we're going to get into that later.
We're all learning things.
So there's a scar. He covers up the scar while Ed Harris is throwing up,
presumably
from his lung cancer or whatever it is that he's dying from.
Yep.
And Jennifer Lawrence is very curious, very inquisitive. The next morning, they pretend like nothing's going on.
Mm-hmm.
He says he slept really well. They go on a really long walk together.
And immediately you start to see the seeds of Ed Harris doesn't really listen to anything Jennifer Lawrence says, even though she's clearly the person who, like, makes the rules in the house. He, like, smokes in the house even though she tells him not to.
No.
He is disrespectful of the space that she has created, which is very important.
Yeah. She might as well be wallpaper.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And that's...
the entire film.
Very off-putting. Very off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll get more into later. So then Michelle Pfeiffer arrives.
Ed Harris's wife.
Who he had not mentioned at all.
Mm-mm.
She shows up. They are all over each other. All this stuff. Michelle Pfeiffer and Jennifer Lawrence have some bonding time where Michelle Pfeiffer is very inquisitive about why Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem don't have kids. Is very drunk. Really good scene.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
And you find out even more about the house that she's put all this time into. You find out that there's something going on where we don't know who, but one of them is reluctant to have kids, or there hasn't been an opportunity to have kids because they're clearly
Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem.
And Javier Bardem, yeah, that was such an interesting scene. I also, as a purely a moviegoer and a fan of Jennifer Lawrence, in the first 45 minutes, I thought, oh, this is OG Jennifer Lawrence in that. It's her reacting.
Yeah, it's Winter's Bone.
Yes, it's Winter's Bone. And it's actually like, I thought the same thing about Hunger Games a lot too, where it was like, yeah, we can kind of just
watch
just
seeing through her eyes.
Her react. Yeah, which she's kind of moved into this David O. Russell, like, I talk a lot, I have, yeah, I'm very sharp-witted, and I love when she plays roles like that. But it was very nice to see her back in this kind, yeah, of, you're watching her just take in things as you would take them in too, of like, totally, this person shows up at your house.
Well, can I say something about that?
Please.
So two things that I wanted to mention this when you said it reminded you of a play. Two things I learned listening to that interview with Darren Aronofsky. One, a big reason it feels like a play, not just because it's written that way, but also those four actors, they rehearsed for 3 months in that house before shooting.
No way.
Yeah. They gave up work for 3 months to rehearse in that house before they shot it.
Wow.
And the second thing, which really plays into why you felt this way about Jennifer Lawrence, is there are only 3 shots that they use in this film. The camera is either a mid to wide on Jennifer Lawrence, you are either a close-up on Jennifer Lawrence, or you are seeing what she's seeing. It's one of those 3 the entire time. Oh, there's a 4th one, over her shoulder.
Over her shoulder.
And never once in the entire film does a character or anyone pass between the camera and Jennifer Lawrence. Never once. No one crosses in front of her. It is unbroken, the relationship between her and the camera. And so the entire movie is covered just by her point of view, close up on her, and over her shoulder. That's it.
Except for like setup shots of like the house.
Except, yeah, there's like a couple setup shots of the house. Yeah. But other
and then
than
like
that,
when it zooms out to see the whole house.
Right. Point. Other than that, just that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting POV.
Yeah. And that was a choice that Darren Aronofsky made. He wanted to do that.
Now, where that becomes really noticeable, though, is Act 3. Act 3 of this.
Totally.
Because it's definitely, you feel like you're on a roller coaster ride of, like, seeing some one person's perspective,
yeah,
on this.
It's very, like, Revenant Birdman-esque, yeah, in that time.
Now, when, after Michelle Pfeiffer is introduced and Ed Harris is there, you find out that Ed Harris clearly knew that Javier Bardem was at the house, came, she sees a picture of him, she tells Javier Bardem, he says, no, he's dying, he told me on the walk he's dying, and he's here because he wanted to see me before he passed.
Yeah.
Which again, while anybody else would be creeped out by that, in kind of, not creeped out, but Javier Bardem is only in love with that and loves, yeah, that and likes that a lot.
And the only reason we're continually referring to these actors by their actor names is because the characters are not named.
No, it's...
When they come into the house, they don't give each other their names, like,
never,
when you meet someone.
He's referred to as a doctor, a writer...
A poet.
Jennifer Lawrence isn't really referred... The inspiration is probably what she's called more than anything,
yeah,
else.
Yeah, probably.
And then the doctor's wife.
Yeah.
That's it. Which is interesting as well. And plays into the symbols of it, I think.
Totally.
And, but then, tell me if I'm skipping anything, we go to this sequence where she keeps having to kick Michelle Pfeiffer out of rooms of the house,
yeah,
which is important.
Michelle Pfeiffer keeps trying to go into Javier Bardem's study,
writing,
where he
study
writes.
Rooms, right.
And no one should go in there.
Wants to touch the rock that's in there, and then eventually what happens is Ed Harris returns from the walk and everything, and Michelle Pfeiffer, and they turn their back on them for 1 second, and next thing you know, they're up in the writer's room, and they've broken the rock.
They break the rock.
And Javier Bardem flips out.
Loses it.
Kicks them out.
Boards, like, up his study.
Like, crunches the glass in his hand.
Oh, yeah.
Starts bleeding. Immediately boards up his study. Like, puts boards over it. Like, no one's going to go in there ever again so that I don't have to worry about it. Like, they ruined it. They ruined the rock. And then Jennifer Lawrence tries to get them out, and they don't leave.
And right then, the suns show up.
But not before they're having sex.
Oh, yeah.
Then they go and, like, immediately just go, like, have sex in a downstairs room. The sons show up, and actual brothers, Dom and Hall Gleason,
the Gleason brothers.
Yeah. They show up, they're immediately fighting, again, ignoring Jennifer Lawrence when she greets them at the door,
mm-hmm,
essentially, and then...
And it's clear that, essentially, in the will of Ed Harris, he has left Dom and Hall Gleason very little to no money, until like later on. Like Domhnall Gleeson, essentially, the younger brother.
Yes.
He has been thwarted by this will.
And he feels like he's been shorted his whole life. He exclaims many times.
And he's very mad.
Yeah. Very mad. And then the brothers fight. Domhnall Gleeson kills the other brother accidentally with a doorknob.
Yeah. And Jennifer Lawrence all the time is running around trying to stop this them from happening.
They're breaking things. Everything. They break a chair. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they have to take the brother who is dying. I thought he was dead instantly, but they're like take apparently his bleeding and they take him to a hospital. Domhnall Gleeson like wanders off into the woods and Javier Bardem leaves Jennifer Lawrence there alone in the house. Again, this is where it also kind of goes horror movie because you're just like, oh my gosh, like this is insane. Like this guy is on a rampage. Like, he just killed this guy.
Come back.
Yeah, Javier Bardem's just like, lock the doors. That's all you need to do. Just lock the doors. And then through the cleaning of the blood, we discover the downstairs boiler room.
Downstairs boiler room because there's like this stain in the floor that
is very weird imagery.
Won't stuff. Come up.
Yeah, but then disappears and then comes back later.
Mm-hmm.
We discover that, which is an interesting discovery. Now,
at this point, did you get it, what it was yet?
No clue.
The whole film is a metaphor. Did you get the metaphor yet?
No, I told you. I immediately knew. I knew what I knew. I knew there was some sort of ritualistic cycle. I knew. Now, in my head, where I was at was like, at some point, someone's going to burn the whole house down. That's how he gets his inspiration. Or this guy's a madman.
Yeah, okay.
Or this guy's some sort of ritualistic thing that like needs attention or fame. I thought it had a lot more to do with fame and attention.
Yeah.
I thought it had a lot more to do with how people treat people that they like respect their what they create.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was also a lot of this of like Jennifer Lawrence was in love with what Javier Bardem creates, but she wants more of it. He needs more of it.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of thought it was going. And I also, with the boiler room, I just kept being like, oh, like he's killed a lot of people.
Yeah. Here. Or something.
I kept thinking it was going to turn into this like thing of like, I'm a mythological being of some sort. And I kill people and hide their bodies in this wall.
Right. But I think it's important to point out because I think like listening to this podcast, if you haven't seen the movie, shame on you for listening to this podcast before seeing the movie. But it probably seems super obvious at this point what the metafor is, listening to us retell
it. Talk about it, because of the things we're hitting.
But the movie actually does it in a very subtle way until you get it. And then you're like, oh my gosh, you know. Well, but anyway, we can go on.
Yeah, I mean, I would be perplexed if someone was fully getting it
at that point.
Maybe when the brothers come, maybe.
But if even then.
But you have to be really wired in, because and I'll get to this later, what I think of a lot of the takes on this, but obviously, if you haven't put it together yet, there's a lot of biblical things going on here, right? This is Genesis going down. There's a lot of theological question marks and kind of head tilts that I have when looking at it.
Totally.
But regardless.
Moving on to the plot.
So, but still, I'm in this kind of like mythical.
Yeah, I don't know what, cyclical, I still don't know what world I'm in.
Yeah, I knew what I knew in that first 30 seconds, and then I was trying to piece it together backwards from that. And so then, kind of like a creepy segment, Domhnall Gleeson comes back and is just like, why'd he leave you here? Which is an interesting segment as well, where he doesn't do anything. He's just like, why would he leave you here alone? Yeah. And I'm grabbing my wallet, and just grabs his wallet and leaves. Javier Bardem comes back, is much more interested in what the death of this guy's son made him feel, what he was kind of experiencing.
It has become like his inspiration.
Yeah, his inspiration. You can tell he's feeding off this. It's getting him out of his block. You can already see that.
Yeah.
And I also was like, man, this is just like going deep down a narcissistic hole of like how we treat women maybe as well. I kind of was like, how he treats her and then
how everyone treats her. Because then the funeral starts.
Now, yeah, the funeral starts really quickly. He goes up to like take a shower and they fall asleep. And then this is when things got weird.
Yeah.
Now,
this is when you come out of like.
This was step one of weird.
There's no way this actually happens in reality.
I guess I still was like, I thought they were very much trying to, I thought we were entering into trying to tell a message or very much like a hallucination or something very not of this world.
Yeah.
Because She comes back down, and there's immediately, like, right away, they're all in funeral clothes, and they're all coming back in to mourn the death of this son.
And a bunch of people are showing up at the
house. A bunch of people are showing up and going nutso and painting, and which we'll come back to the painting, breaking things and not listening to Jennifer Lawrence when she's
asking
them to not.
And, like, using very crass language with her.
Oh, yeah. Well, the guy who, like, tries to hit on her and then calls her lots of things. That again, I was just I thought this was much more commentary on people at that point. And then you have, obviously, she, like, they break the sink. That
she's getting mad,
stressed out to watch this in the theater.
Yeah,
but like, not only is she stressed out, but the camera, everything about how it was shot, stressed me out watching this segment.
Totally.
And then Michelle Pfeiffer being like, "You need to go wear decent clothes," and she's just come downstairs and she has to go, like, for some reason dress up for these people that are in her house all of a sudden,
and destroying her home.
Yeah, they're all. That moment, also really interesting moment, when Javier Bardem gives the speech, and then they're like, "Will you please say something?"
Oh yeah, they
and
look
she
at Jennifer
has
Lawrence.
Nothing to say. Yeah. Very interesting and just, like, so
yeah,
weird.
But Javier Bardem, again, he is very much like, A, these people need this right now.
Very
good. We're gonna give it to them, and B, you know, it's also feeding his sort of creative mind.
Yeah, and pause on all that. So my feelings towards Javier Bardem, and this, like, I will get this later, of why I think he is such a phenomenal actor.
He is.
Is as a character, you're like, man, this guy is messed up. This guy is what, how he is treating her is so messed up. How, like, this relationship is so messed up.
Yeah.
But he's so warm. It's like he has this good intention that's very written into the role, but he leans into of he's trying to help these people. He's trying to do all these good things. He's disregarding Jennifer Lawrence, but you can also see why she feeds off him.
But he has a very gentle, quiet voice.
Yeah, he does. But you can see why she is almost addicted to him as well.
Totally.
There's like, and he clearly
he's
is as well
he's
with
extremely
her.
Charismatic.
And he cares about her in this very weird, twisted way. It's just like, he clearly cares more throughout the film about attention and love and appreciation and the spreading of that.
Right.
Anyway, so then he kicks everyone out of the house.
They get in a big fight.
Big fight leads to a big sex scene.
Yeah, I thought they were going to pull a History of Violence and just do it on the stairs.
Oh, well, it started there.
It started there.
It's not a Darren Aronofsky film unless something starts off in some weird land and ends in a sex scene.
But I was surprised he faded out on it.
Oh, yeah. I think, well, you would expect it to be much more graphic.
Much more graphic than
based
Darren
on the film, too. Oh, we're about to get even more graphic.
Yeah.
Here we go. So then she immediately knows she's pregnant. Interesting.
She wakes up the next morning, turns to him,
I'm pregnant. Worst part of the movie.
Which
for
I
me.
Didn't know that's how it worked.
I literally, that was the worst part of the movie.
She
for
just
me.
Knew.
I laughed in the theater. I don't know why that was necessary. He's like, you know.
It's a little strange.
In the metaphor of the movie, I'm like, okay, so we're in this, like, not real place. But she, like, looks out the window and just turns over and I'm pregnant. And
Javier
Bardem is
really
like,
different.
You clearly are. Now we get our first flash forward. Flashes forward months. She's third trimester.
Well, that's the moment also that he gets his inspiration to write.
Yes, I missed huge part. He immediately starts writing, and immediately, as all writers do, naked with a piece of parchment and a quill. I was like, they just subtly say that, like, where he's like, oh, we don't have cell signal, and, like, I also write naked with a quill on parchment. really loved that. And then he finishes it, walks into the doorway. She has a beautiful moment reading it. One single tear rolls down as she reads it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new work. And then
it's a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece. And revealed very quickly that she was not the first to read it. He had already sent it to a publicist.
He already sent it to...
Very interesting moment. And
his publicist, which I just thought for a second, Amy Poehler, but no, that's in Mr. Woodcock. Completely different movie.
Yes.
But his publicist is Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig.
Another SNL alum.
And he's found his inspiration. Everything is right in the world. She's
like 3 months pregnant.
She's 9 months pregnant. She's
9 months pregnant.
Yeah,
sorry.
She's third trimester.
I meant third trimester.
Yeah, and she prepares... Really a visceral... This is a visceral moment for me. She prepares this gorgeous meal by candlelight.
It's quite the meal.
Like, she has already, the candles are out. In the moment, I was like, wow, she has done it up. She's got, like, four things. And you just know it's not going to go right.
No.
You're just, she's slaved over the meal. You're like,
they are not eating this food.
They are not eating, yeah. So, they go to sit down. She's done up. Even though she's third trimester, she is done up to the nines.
She's clearly made
quite
an effort.
First time she's wearing makeup, too.
Yeah.
She's, like, done up for him because of this work. And then, all of a sudden, a knock at the door, and there are fans there. And this is where we truly descend into madness.
Yeah.
If the first act is through Ed Harris being there,
through maybe, the brother murder.
Yeah. And this, well, I would say the second act is like the brother murder through the I'm pregnant.
Yeah, I would say the first act ends with the brother getting killed.
Oh, okay.
And then
second act is
dealing
with
that, and then the funeral.
For sure. And then the third act is the time jump on.
Yeah.
And the third act of this movie is insane. So all the fans are there. The first fan that we see who's like, I felt like your words, they were for me. And Javier Bardem is like, they were for you.
They were for you.
Very interesting moment to come back to later as well.
So to go back a little bit, just
yes,
to point
please.
Out, it was in the middle of the funeral scene that I got it.
Okay. That you got what was happening.
That I understood the metaphor. Completely.
Well,
and I thought back, and what did it for me was thinking back to the brothers.
Mm.
And actually thinking back to the stain in the floor. When
Why?
She returns to it again, because I'm like, oh, Mark of Cain.
Interesting.
Like, that's what that, to
is,
me, is the
is.
Stain in the floor, is Mark of Cain. And I was
okay.
like, oh, it's all Genesis.
House. Yes,
got
yes,
it.
It's all Genesis. What makes sense to me looking back on it is that they're at this wake, and they can't find the words. So they ask him to provide the words as you would reading a biblical passage.
Right.
And then the reading of the biblical passage is all the meaning that you need of what's going on with him. That made sense to me looking back on it of like,
yeah.
oh, of course, he says he provides the words when there are no words, as
yeah.
we would read a Bible verse over a death.
Yeah, so it's like start of Act 3 when she's fixing up the nursery.
Yeah.
And she pulls that rug back over the, like, whole bloody hole in the floor.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, I get it now. That's Mark of Cain. We're in Genesis. Got it.
You were so, on it. I was
well,
not there.
Okay, to be honest, my wife was sitting next to me, and she read through the whole movie as it was happening, and she leaned over to me, and she said,
the truth comes
she
out,
leaned over
people.
To me, and she said, the whole thing is a metaphor at one point.
Ah.
And so then I'm looking for what is this metaphor.
Erin just couldn't just wait. She couldn't wait until the end.
She's
Erin has just come in
apartment.
And is now a spot. Yes, yes. Erin, why couldn't you just wait until the end? Why couldn't you wait till the end to read about it? You could read all the things you need.
I was not enjoying the movie because I didn't know what was happening.
Oh.
And I personally think the movie doesn't make sense if you don't know that it's a metaphor. Mm. So I was just like, well, first of all, we had seen it 2 weeks before. This was another scary movie. And I was like,
another one-word film.
Why do I keep doing this to myself?
Yeah.
And during it, I looked up all the spoilers so I wasn't scared. So in the beginning of this, I was like, this is a horror movie. I need to look up what happened so I can handle it.
But you enjoyed the movie so much more.
So much more. Once I knew the metaphor, I was like, yes, I get it. I can
Same.
Watch this. I can enjoy
Same,
it.
Actually. Once I figured it out, I was like, oh.
In the beginning, I was just frustrated until I knew.
Wow, this is really good because I'm going to be on the exact opposite side of this and say that the movie without the metaphor is actually a stronger watch. Well, no, that's not true. The metaphor adds another layer to it that's extremely interesting, and we're talking about it. So clearly
okay.
the metaphor is amazing. But.
Sorry to segue. So the fans start to show up.
Yes.
At the house.
Yes.
Clearly having loved his new work.
And the first fan that we see that he says, well, the words are for you, ends up becoming kind of the head priest.
Yeah,
as well, and marking similar to like an Ash Wednesday on all the foreheads
yeah.
later. So now the fans are all coming in like crazy, and this is where we descend into madness. The fans are coming in like crazy. He says, hey, they're not going to come in the house. I'm just going to take care of them out here. They've come from so far away.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've had kind of like a Three Wise Men sort of feel to it, too.
Yeah.
And
totally.
And then she is, they're breaking into the house. They're all trying to get in. They're messing everything up. They're messing up the dinner. That dinner does not get eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's coming in from all over. They're disrespecting the house. So it's the wake times a thousand.
Yeah.
And
they essentially begin to transform the house into a whole bunch of different things.
Right. And yeah. And it kind of takes everything that starts small, the seeds of what happened at the wake, of painting, of not listening, of actively kind of damaging the house.
Of fighting.
Now to a 10, to a times 10.
Of sexual things.
Yeah. And then the publicist shows up, it gets big, it gets crazy. And this is still in my head. I'm still in kind of like fame land of like, oh, this is what people do when they crave attention or fame or love. And then I really did. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I at this point I was like, she's going to blow this whole house up.
Oh yeah. She's going to be the one that kills everyone.
He's going to blow the whole house up or she's going to blow the whole house up. And there's going to be a new cycle. And that's going to be, I knew that cycle was coming, but it wasn't until the next part we get to that I fully was like, oh, this is all biblical.
Yeah.
In which it took me probably, as quick as I found out the first thing in that first moment of what we were doing, the biblical stuff took me probably longer than most.
Mm-hmm.
Because then when she starts going into labor and at this point everything's going crazy in the house, there's
like,
gunshots.
She finds herself like in a brothel and then in a war zone and... Like all
and
of
then
a sudden
kind of like all these hostages are taken and getting killed and bagged and tagged. And then, yeah, it's crazy. You have like this one soldier who's taking care of her. Then he gets blown to pieces.
Yeah, it's wild.
Absolutely crazy. And then
she gets sequestered off into a room.
Right. She goes into labor. He then appears and is taking care of her. Because originally he's got a gas mask on. You think he's gone or dead or something, but he's got a gas mask on. He's okay. He rips down those boards. They're safe
They're
in his
the study.
She gives birth. It's a boy. And they're there with the baby.
Graphic scene. I would say.
Yeah. Also, like, all those... We forgot to mention the tremors that she continually has.
Oh,
the, like, the shaking tremor that
every,
she continually
every, like,
has.
20 minutes of the movie... There's an extreme close-up of her, and she's, like, looking into the walls of the house, and there's this shot of a heart that is, every time she looks into the wall, the heart is, like, more black
and
dying.
Dying, yes.
Which, it took a while for me to be like, oh, she's looking into the heart of the house.
Yeah.
You know, she's seeing that this house that she has created, this world that she has created, is slowly just disintegrating.
Well, the second time when the heart started to harden the first a little bit, that was when I was like, oh, this is the heart of the house.
Got
this
it, yeah.
Because at first I was like, is there a being in the walls?
Yeah.
Like, is that what she's discovering?
Very
in the, or, you know.
But
is,
then, yes, then she also begins to have these, like, when she gets angry, there's, like, an earthquake that sort of begins to happen around her.
Yes, in the tremor of, like, she's feeling the pain of the house, and she starts to... You know, so the birth is obviously like a large tremor as well for her.
Yeah.
And then,
which you start to see that she herself has some like power.
Some sort of power. And this was where, so then we have the turning point of she has the baby.
She has the baby.
She will not let Javier Bardem hold the baby.
Because she knows that Javier Bardem's going to take, because all the people want to see the baby.
Yes. But even more, like what I, well, I saw it as a bargaining chip too, of in my head of she knows that he wants the baby. She knows that... She wants them all gone, so it's kind of this bargaining that goes down where she's like, you need to tell them all to go.
Yeah.
And he says no. He's like, not going to do it. Then he kind of gets this solemn look to him, kind of a change in him for the first time.
Yeah.
He's very upset. He does not move and stoic, and they have this Mexican standoff. And
for like hours.
Days, possibly.
Days,
we
maybe.
Don't know. And then she dozes to sleep. She wakes up, the baby's gone, he's taking the baby out in the hallway. By the way, as soon as the birth happens, obviously it goes quiet, they start bringing gifts.
Yeah.
For the baby's a big stark change there. And then he brings the baby out, the baby crowd surfs, gets killed, neck's broken.
Very graphic.
Graphic, as she's chasing after the baby. And then, so graphic. At this point, I'm 100% into the biblical metaphor.
Yeah.
I've been since... Since she gave birth, since that guy who's the first fan who's doing the Ash Wednesday thing, I was like,
totally.
Oh, we are full biblical metaphor now. And then that was a huge realization. So then when the baby, in my head, i.e. Jesus, is
killed
by the people, that makes sense. And then when the baby is eaten, that I did not see coming. So the baby is torn into pieces. This is, again, this is when it's so graphic. I'm not making it any more. It's less graphic than just saying.
They literally break up the child's body and they're eating it.
That's similar to a communion,
like a literal version of communion.
Yeah, and again, and it's we'll clearly get into this in a minute.
Spiritual healing experience for all these people.
They all eat the baby, and then she, as any mother would, goes and starts.
It's like
goes crazy. Just trying to defend and kill, and she's got a piece of glass.
She's like stabbing people.
Yeah. And then this is where it gets so gratuitous that I just don't see the point of it in this section, because
where they start beating her up,
they absolutely accost Jennifer Lawrence. They are
calling her any number of names,
and it is one of the most graphic scenes. That whole scene is probably like top 10 most graphic.
Well, because again, it's just a close up on her
getting assaulted,
just beaten, absolutely like curb stomped by a whole group of people.
And this is one of the most controversial scenes in general, too, because you know there's a large camp of people that are like, why do we need to display those things? And it's a trigger for a lot of people, and it's also it's so excessive, it's so gratuitous,
it really is.
But it paints this picture that's clearly part of the point and of what Darren Aronofsky wants to say. And then after she gets absolutely demolished, Javier Bardem is back, and he absolutely goes nuts trying to defend her, and then literally is immediately like, we need to forgive all these people for killing our baby. They wanted to see the baby. He's immediately back to defending these people, and she's
had enough.
Had enough, and she takes a lighter that she had previously kind of thrown off into a little...
Ed Harris's lighter,
and blows the house up. And just sets it ablaze, and then somehow survives in a crusted, blackened state of char. And you get kind of the crux of the movie when he carries her upstairs. We find out that he is definitely not human.
Yes, because he is untouched. Javier Bardem is unscathed, and she is...
dead, essentially.
Totally dead.
And then he asks, essentially, if she still loves him. Because he needs her to, and if her heart is his, essentially.
Yep.
And she makes, I think, what is the point of the movie, and we can talk more about it later, which is that, like, she doesn't think that he's in love with her.
Yeah.
He just was in love with how much she loves him.
Yeah.
And then he reaches, and then she says, reaches my heart has always
been
yours.
Into her burnt corpse.
Yeah, and she says, my heart has always been yours. Like, you can take it, because I've got nothing left to give. I gave you everything.
Yeah.
And he takes out her heart, crusts off the stuff, and inside is the rock.
From the beginning.
And he places
it. AKA the forbidden fruit.
The forbidden fruit, right. And places it in the little mantle, and the house starts over again as new, and a new wife.
A new version of Jennifer Lawrence.
New kind of looks like her,
Looks like a Mrs. Doubtfire version of Jennifer Lawrence.
Like subtle
like
prosthetics.
It looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Looper.
Yes. Subtle facial things that are different. I think it's a different actress.
It's a totally different actress. Right, yeah. But I think they put makeup on her to make her look a little bit more like...
Yeah, she definitely rolls over in the exact same way as Jennifer Lawrence in the beginning. Same honey line.
Yep.
Yep.
End of movie.
And end of movie. We've made it.
Yes.
End of film. All right, so... that's the film. If you didn't see it and you listened to that, shame on you. Or if you really didn't want to see something that graphic and you were just like at the beginning, well, I might as well listen to this because I'm not going to see it, then great. You just got the film. Hopefully you enjoyed our summary of it. And let's talk about, before we get into the theology of it, before we get into that side of it, let's just talk about it as a film.
Strictly as a work of...
as a work of film, this is my favorite Darren Aronofsky film I've seen.
Really?
Yes. I'm not very high on Black Swan.
Me neither.
I need to rewatch it, I think, because
I don't.
I was thoroughly fine on it when I saw it in the theaters. I thought it was good. I thought it was okay, I guess you could say. Didn't understand a ton of the hype.
I like La La Land better.
I like La La Land a lot.
Basically, a movie about the same thing.
Oh.
What does success and the drive for success do to you?
Well, then we can throw Whiplash in there, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Same thing.
And The Wrestler, I like more than Black Swan.
I love The Wrestler.
The Wrestler's very good.
Wrestler's probably my favorite.
Yeah, very, very good. So basically, though, if you're going to take the Darren Aronofsky films, Wrestler, Black Swan, and mother are all in one category, and then Noah is a thousand stories below it, buried in the dirt under grime. And
well, and Requiem is, it's like a, it's somewhat in the mother category, but yeah. Not really.
Well, I hated Noah a lot. Oh, I could do a whole Noah podcast on how much I hated it. And no one came in. I was ready to like Noah. I really was. I was like, sweet, let's watch
Noah. I didn't like Noah either.
Noah was, but it's very, you can clearly tell that it's made by the same person because it's so much about Earth, protecting Earth, mm-hmm. similar message, clearly something he wants to get across in his movies. But the overall film I liked a lot. That there was so much excellence. There's so much excellence in filmmaking. Even what you were saying about the camera angles.
Oh, the way it's shot was beautiful.
The any time that there's a movie like that that takes place in one space that could be a play that has a lot of interesting scenes.
The whole movie takes place in a house, and yet you're on the edge of your seat
the whole time.
The whole time.
I didn't take a breath. I was in a hyperventilation for most of it.
Yeah.
And the third act surprised me in every possible way, mm-hmm. so that was successful in that. I think Javier Bardem and Jennifer Lawrence are both fantastic in it. And not to say that Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer aren't.
No, they're great.
A bunch of people had been like, Michelle Pfeiffer's great in it. So I was a little bit like, I think planning for more from her. But I'm such a fan of Javier Bardem in everything I see.
I will say I'm not a fan of Jennifer Lawrence, and I liked her in this movie more than I've liked her in a lot of movies that I've seen her in. Maybe any other movie except for Winter's Bone. I loved her in Winter's Bone. Mm-hmm. And then this is probably number two for me.
But because of all that, as a, just a film within itself, and how much I was playing catch-up with trying to figure out what was going on in it, mm-hmm. and yet it was still operating as a movie about a relationship, too.
Yeah.
Very, you know, in the simple term of...
And not, know, not in, like, a naturalistic world, clearly.
No, no.
But, again, the movie's about a lot of things. You know, and that's why I slightly disagree with what Aaron said. Like, I think that even if you didn't necessarily get the biblical metaphor, you could still draw a whole lot out of that film. And then post, someone could tell you, well, did you get the Bible metaphor? And then they'd be like, oh my gosh.
Well, that's why it feels so much like a play, because so many times we see plays that are drawn out into these huge hyper dream realities or whatever, but still have these simple themes that are about communication, what we value about attention, mm-hmm. you know, fame, different things like that, and how people treat other people.
Right.
And
'cause in making a point about how we treat the environment, Darren Aronofsky is also making a point and how we treat women.
And how we treat each other.
And how we treat each other at the same time.
I legitimately, for a while, I was like, oh, this is about how some people are like, how we treat some people as invisible based on status. I was ready for it to be like all about that, like levels of status too. Because Jennifer Lawrence is essentially invisible for a lot of this and trampled on.
Yeah. But as a film, I thought it really worked.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
That alone. Now, once I made the biblical connotations, it lost a little bit of its mysteriousness. It lost a little bit of its, lost a little of its shine for me because I'd figured it out a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I liked it when it was just kind of in this mythical legend sort of thing that I knew nothing about. But then when it became a biblical metaphor, I felt like I knew everything about it because I was like, not because I know everything about the Bible. That's not. But I was like,
but
I know the structure of this. I know this story.
I know where it's going.
So I'm ahead of it. And I'm also comparing it and nitpicking the metaphor in a lot of ways.
Yeah. As soon as she's pregnant, we know they're going to kill the people somehow are going to kill their son.
Yeah.
You know.
So let's talk strictly biblical metaphor. Okay. What did you think of it?
So I said this. Aaron and I did a slight review of it, a small review of it after on our YouTube channel. And what I said was from a theological standpoint, I thought, what an incredibly interesting take on the story that I don't want to say thoroughly enjoyed watching because it was obviously very difficult to watch a lot of parts, but it was fun for me to see someone who I consider to be a very good filmmaker, and I think a lot of people would say Darren Aronofsky is a really good filmmaker, to see someone who's a really good filmmaker play with metaphor with a biblical narrative like that. That was really enjoyable for me as someone who loves the Bible and loves the biblical story. On the other side of it, though, I was like, oh, he's just wrong, though. You know, if you believe what the Bible actually says, in my belief, then, like, that's an interesting take, Darren Aronofsky. However, it's not correct. It's not biblically sound. Like, your God character does not have the right intentions at all. You know? Because to me, the Javier Bardem character, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess you could look at God as this, like, self-obsessed artist. Except, what you have to realize is that in the Bible, what is spread out, at least the way I read it, is that all of God's motivation for everything he does is based out of love for his people, which you got a little bit of that in the film, but a lot of it was just this arrogant, sort of self-obsessed, creative mind, which is not what I get from the God of the Bible at all. And the second assumption that he made was that God created the earth so that he could enjoy it, which is essentially what Mother Nature, Jennifer Lawrence, wants to do in the film.
Or Mother Earth, yeah.
Yeah, Mother Earth. They are creating this home just for them to be in it.
Yes.
Which, biblically, that's not why God created the earth.
No.
He created the earth so we could inhabit it.
Yeah, the metaphor makes more sense if you're thinking of it as the house is created for Ed Harris. Or the house is created for the people who are coming into it.
Right.
Whereas in the film, they set it up like they're invading into this thing that was already... That
they don't belong in.
Right, which it biblically that's my with Darren Aronofsky especially, it's like with Noah, even let's take that, he took so many things. There's only a chapter on Noah.
Yeah,
maybe two. There's only a chapter.
That's the difference, because he went through a lot of scripture in one.
Yeah,
but so Noah's
a chapter or two, but still a chapter or two, and then throws out 90% of what's in that chapter.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, as an artist and a creator myself, I want you to have kind of, you know, dealer's choice on what you want to do with that. But if you're setting it up as this metaphor that works on that level, then you open yourself up to the criticism
scrutiny.
Of, well, make sure it does work on that level. Now, his take on God, that's his prerogative.
That's totally his prerogative.
That's his prerogative. Because
I'm saying with my reading of the Bible, that's inaccurate.
Well,
like
that's also something, that's a qualm raised with Christianity
all the time.
Of do we worship this, is Christianity the worship of this God who... Why would you worship this God? Does he needs your worship? He needs to, and that's why the crux of it, when she says, you know, you just love how much I love you, you know, and you love how much these people love you and need you.
Right.
That's a qualm raised often. My problem, obviously, like on a strictly a personal level, I don't agree with that.
Right. That's how I feel.
But I also mad respect the fact that he was like, this is my take on this, and I'm gonna say
He articulated it in that way.
My problem is much more just with the technicality of a lot of these metaphors once you start bringing them in. For example, I didn't realize she was Mother Earth until Aaron told me 2 days ago she was Mother Earth.
Yeah.
I kept being like, well, why is she called Mother? I read nothing about it. I read nothing about it afterwards.
Which doesn't follow with the biblical metaphor
at all.
That's the thing.
So that's my main qualm.
Because Mother Earth is not a character in the Bible.
Mother Earth isn't a character in the Bible. So you're going on these... Now, again, though, you're inserting this character as the Earth.
Very Noah-esque in a way.
But then...
Inserting characters.
But different, though, then there's no point where Javier Bardem creates Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence isn't... Yeah, so that doesn't... That off the bat doesn't make sense to me, because I'm like... Well, where's the part where he created the earth? If we're going to go biblically, if we're going to stick with this biblical metaphor, then he creates, you know, he clearly, they had the, as you just told me, the cut in the rib to create, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer. So if we're in that world, why is this thing? And for me, I immediately left the theater saying Jennifer Lawrence is the Holy Spirit.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because the people aren't listening to her. She's this voice that no one listens to. She exists within this three-headed
thing.
That's
like if a Christian had made the film.
I guess. Maybe. You're right.
Why aren't you listening to the Spirit's leading
in your
life?
Holy Spirit, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, they like turn to hear something from the Holy Spirit, and then the Holy Spirit doesn't have anything to say. But they're not listening to the Holy Spirit when the Holy Spirit does say something.
Yeah.
And then, so I was like, oh, that makes sense. So even in a non-Christian sense, if Jennifer Lawrence is your conscience, or Jennifer Lawrence is this voice that's telling you not to do these things and you're just ignoring. And also that makes sense in the... realm of the idea that she just is at the beginning. She is with Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
And then the only person to enter that study with them is Jesus, is the third head. That makes sense to me. Yeah. And then she's the one that they're literally like assaulting and she's screaming at That's them after they do that. So for me, it made way more sense as her as the Holy Spirit. Now, the house part of it doesn't make a ton of sense with the Holy Spirit and the end of it with like the rock and that stuff. But what an awesome conversation to be having.
Yeah.
And I think like regardless of how you feel on any of this, if you're a Christian, if you're a non-Christian, like it's a very good conversation and
totally.
And especially like, you know, the communion thing of eating the baby was so visceral for me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa, that is, I mean, because also, again, an artist's take on it, because the communion is set up as a thing Jesus did.
Yeah.
And the baby doesn't say.
Yeah, the baby doesn't say, here's my body. Here's my leg.
They kill the baby and then they're like, let's eat him. Yeah. But as far as like.
And that's, I guess, what I mean in terms of his take on God. I'm thinking of like scripture after scripture and moment after moment where I'm like, but what about when God says this? What about when God does this? That doesn't support your take of God is this self-obsessed artist in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like the whole Jesus thing. I'm like, well, there's a lot of things that I'm like, you're kind of omitting that though in order to make this point.
Yeah. And you skip, you know, they as you have to, because they start in Genesis and then they skip everything about Jesus to just go to the metaphor of him being sacrificed.
Being born as apparently the child of Mother Earth and God.
Yeah. I do like the idea, though, that the end, what does make a ton of sense to me is him essentially, the need to forgive.
Yeah.
The immediate need to forgive for this awful thing, because that was the strongest metaphor for me.
Yeah.
The minute that the people take the baby mm-hmm. and the baby dies, and these people are awful, and these people are absolutely the most gratuitous part of the film. I go. That actually makes a ton of sense.
Which is interesting because I shouldn't put words in his mouth, but in my eyes, based on what I know of Darren Aronofsky's history and his beliefs on God, I'm sure that's put in the film as to show like, look what a jerk God is. But I look at that exact same happening, and we say, look at how much God loves us, even though we are awful.
Right.
You know?
Right. And then on top
Which is crazy, because it's the same thing.
It's the same, looking at the same
But our relationship to that character changes the way we feel about
it. The violent nature and the overall disgustingness of all these people killing this innocent thing, that metaphor is probably the strongest.
Oh, totally.
Of like, yeah, that's exactly what
Because
happens. That's biblically what that is.
So no, that's on
like,
point.
Now, the eating of the baby, we can talk about that. Yeah. And again,
I should clarify, when I say like, I said earlier that, you know, where he, I thought he was way off was with the idea that God somehow created the earth so that he and Mother Earth could enjoy it. And that's wrong. He actually created it for us. Now, where I do think he was right on was in the point he made about our treatment of that earth with the tearing apart of the house. And I'm not trying to go all environmentalist here.
No, it's dead on.
But it's dead on with the way that, and to me, the house is not only the earth, but it's the way we treat everything that God has given us. Because they even misuse the poem. Because look at all of the evil that they come into that house to do in the name of this book.
Yeah.
Has changed my life. That's and for me, that was huge because I see people who are believers in God running around just butchering the Bible and doing terrible things in the name of this. So I'm not saying that like God created the earth for us, so we should do whatever we want. I'm saying Aaron Aronofsky's point was right on. However, that's not the reason God created the earth.
Well, that's why I love bringing it back to the painting thing. I love that, like, she comes out and she's like, why are you painting the walls? That's one of my favorite
so
points.
Harmless.
Like, when you look back on that, because these people are like, we're trying to, like,
with that,
make
with
it better.
With the sun
like,
from fences, just like, paint the walls.
The sun from, like, yeah. But also, what a great analogy of, like, being like, I put so much, this is the most, how beautiful is the earth? Like, what are you doing? And they're just like, I'm just trying to help. Yeah. And they're just randomly painting things.
And to me, like, Jennifer Lawrence's character and Javier Bardem's character, if I were to mix those two together, mm-hmm. that might be a more accurate portrayal of how I see God. Because I see God as like, he does come downstairs and is like, what are you doing? Like, why are you ruining this?
Yeah.
Like, I've invited you in. Why would you treat it like this? But then he's also like, I love you. I still love you. And I want you to stay. But why are you doing that? You know, like, that's kind of how I see it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and that's why there's no, you know, it doesn't fully encompass the two sides of a parent who comes mm-hmm. and sees that your room is a mess. Does the parent forgive you that the room is a mess? Yes. Does the parent love you no matter what, that your room is messy? Absolutely. Right. They're your parent. Do they still think you should have cleaned their room if you told you? Yes, of course. They're like, why isn't this room clean?
Right.
So you have to have both sides of that coin. And while them as individual characters were either side of that coin, putting them together obviously didn't fit into the metaphor of the story that Darren Aronofsky was trying to tell. He also, though, what a valuable thing. I don't know. He might have said in an interview, I don't know where his faith lies, but I actually prefer it that way because clearly this is his... A pigeonhole view of what he sees of these events, and what a useful thing. Also,
which I'm just totally drawing inferences from, which is probably wrong.
Well, yeah, but it's also we bring something to it. He brings something to it. Mm-hmm. People bring different things to these stories, and it's an interesting look into that dynamic. And we can all have our biblically what we bring to it and what we think theologically makes sense. And other people can be like, I'm not a Christian, so I'm just going to bring what I see to it or what I see of Christians. And but. Also, shout out to the studio for making this film.
Yeah.
They have been under fire a lot lately because it didn't make as much money as they thought it would. But, and I'm blanking on the studio. I'll add it in at the end. But they made this movie. It's an original movie.
It is. I can't think of another movie that I'm like, oh, it's kind of like that.
No, it's its own thing. And we want more of these movies. We complain about sequels. We complain about remakes. And the head of the studio even said this. You complain that we make Fast and the Furious 8, 9, and 10, and yet we make something original and people don't see it, or people are like, well, I hear this, this, and this about it, so I'm not going to see
weird.
It. So, go, and also, if we're, if faith films could take a note, I would, these faith films that keep coming out in this faith, if they could just take a note of the fact that this is an original piece that operates on a lot of levels that everyone can come to the table and commune and see regardless of and have an opinion out, and also this great discussion can happen. Let's make more of these movies.
Yeah, I would rather see this than another like
Heaven is for Real.
Yeah.
Or Miracles from Jesus's Apple Tree. Yeah. Or whatever it is. Not that I've never seen Heaven is for Real. And Greg Kinnear, Jennifer Garner, I like both of them.
I did see Heaven is for Real.
Oh.
It was fine.
Well,
but it was also very, it was very one-sided. Like, here's how I feel about a lot of Christian films that come out.
Give me the
They are made so that Christians can go to them to feel good about themselves and good about what they believe in.
Hmm.
And anyone who and I think a lot of people who are in that Christian film industry who truly believe that their film is being used as this powerful evangelical tool are, and I'm not saying that some of those films can't change people, because they absolutely can and they do, but I think for the most part, the audience is people who already believe this, who are coming to reconfirm their belief and feel really good about the fact that they believe it. Whereas a movie like this, it challenged me, even though I disagreed with a lot of it biblically, even though I didn't think a lot of it was theologically accurate, it challenged me to really think about, well, why do I believe that? Is his portrayal of God accurate? And that's so much more interesting to me.
And don't kid yourself about these faith films that you may see. And this, I will challenge churches about this. It's a marketing ploy as well. I'm not saying there is a market for the fact that there are not a ton of films that churches feel like they can put up on the projector on Sunday and say, "Hey, we're all going on Wednesday to see this movie," and it's literally a flop proof formula of, we spend $15 million on this movie, we know exactly how many evangelical Christians we can get in to see it, and we're going to get all the family in for it, and we're going to make our bottom line, and we're going to make, not a huge profit, but a margin of profit. So don't think that, it's some martyrdom of them trying to push some agenda, because Not that that's not a part of it. I mean, a lot of these, I know some of these people who are involved making those films, but that's also when the money gets put behind it, they know they're going to cover their bottom line. Versus if you make a risky Christian film, which I know there's one coming out by a faith company that's like got a PG-13 rating or an R rating that people are like freaked out about,
but
because it's a risk because they're supposed to be family friendly and this might challenge or this might make someone uncomfortable, like Mother would make people uncomfortable.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, that's challenging, but you know, maybe those type of risks are risks worth taking. Yeah. And Christians, maybe those are worse. Maybe you should, you know, not be afraid to come and see that and be challenged a little bit and change
and
your perspective.
And there are big actors that want to do those kind of films.
Oh,
like when I saw that Jennifer Garner was in that movie and like Greg Kinnear, I'm like, they're like, those are legit people.
Greg Kinnear is great, has a ton of really awesome movies that he's a part of.
So does Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, both of them.
Like,
yeah, no, so, you're right. So, but you know, so good on you, Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah.
Good on you. Good on you. I disagree with how you see God.
Right. And like,
thanks for seeing it, because I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, and good on you for being... I'm not saying that I agree with everything that's in the film. Obviously, you listen to this podcast.
No.
But like, good on him for being willing to make some people angry in order to put forth something that he really feels strongly about. Whether it's something that I agree with or not, you know.
And I felt like I had to shower about 10 times after watching
it. Oh, my gosh.
Because, yeah. Jennifer Lawrence, all I wanted to do was say I'm sorry. Also, I couldn't help but think about how people, this is on a different level, and I don't think this is intentional at all, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. I couldn't help but see this movie operate as a level of how fame, I mentioned this, but how fame and how we treat people who have certain, who were, like, how fans treat people.
Mm.
I think it's just because I was operating in that headspace for a minute, but I couldn't help but think about, with all of the celebrity nude photos that leak and different things like that, and
mm-hmm.
how the internet works with trolls and just how vicious we are.
No, I think that's a huge part of it, and it's so interesting that message rings true in a film where you do not see a single piece of technology,
no,
except for maybe when things go haywire.
And what a mirror, and I mean, for me, it was just a mirror of like how we treat celebrities in general. I kept thinking about that with Jennifer Lawrence. Not that it was going to go there, but I was just like, you know, when you think about how much she is at the center of everything, like she's on the cover of Vogue in front of the Statue of Liberty, and it's controversial, and people, there's people on both sides flipping out about different things. She says this feminist thing, people on both sides are like, oh, well, it's white feminism on one side, here's all this stuff, angry about it, and then on the other side they're just like, oh, she needs to shut up because of blah blah blah. And then you take the nude photos and how something like that leaks, people see that, that's essentially, when you look at things like that, she sees that as a form of sexual assault, because you're looking at something that you don't have her permission to look at, and yet it's out all over the place. You can, you know, if you Google it, I'm sure it comes up or whatever, but these things are out there. And so when they were kicking the crap out of her, I just kept thinking about, wow, isn't this kind of a metaphor for celebrities in general as well?
And Javier Bardem's relationship to his fans is also a metaphor for how especially a lot of like new YouTube celebrities or like Taylor Swift or Justin Bieber, how they're like, I just love my fans so much. I love my fans. I love my fans. I do anything
for
my fans.
You get drunk on it.
And also it can get to a point where it's like, oh my gosh, I've gone too far.
Yeah.
Like they're taking advantage of me. I have no life anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
When people knock on my door, the thousands of listeners to this podcast, and I'm just like, please, I need more of it. All of my fans. They show up at the door, and my roommates say, make them leave.
No.
And I say, they came from so far away.
Oh, no.
All of them.
Oh, my gosh.
That's not true. That was a joke. But I hope you caught it.
Are we wrapping up?
Do you want to go?
Well, no, just because I have a great, like, ending tidbit of information about this film. That would really bring us full circle.
I'm so ready. Yeah, I think I hit all my little bullet points.
Okay. So, first thing we talked about on this podcast about the movie was the title, the exclamation point.
Sling!
Mother,
Sling!
Not capitalized.
Right. Mother not capitalized with an exclamation point with this sound.
Sling!
Sling!
So, did you notice in the credits, and I have to give a shout out to my wife, she's the one that noticed this, Erin noticed this. She read it. She just said, I read it.
And the peanut
quietly.
Gallery is here.
So, the only character whose character name is capitalized. And the only word that is capitalized in the whole film, guess what character?
Javier Bardem.
Him. That's his character name, is him. And it's the only one capitalized.
Oh. It's very telling.
I just looked it on IMDb and they got it wrong. So IMDb, fix it. Almost broke something.
And we're out. Just knocking.
Now we're going to ruin my house mother.
Well, I hope if you didn't see it and you listened to this and you know everything, now you're similar to Aaron. You know the things about it, and now you're 10 times more intrigued, and you'll enjoy it 10 times more.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Or if you did see it, hopefully you learned something new. Yeah. What a film. Hopefully this is a start of a lot of good films to talk about this year.
Hopefully.
I'm really excited. It was fantastic.
There are. Is Suburbicon going to be good?
Suburbicon is going to be very good.
You're sure?
The Coen brothers have been rough.
What? Recently.
What?
I feel like I haven't seen a good Coen Brothers.
You don't like Inside Llewyn Davis?
No.
No?
I fell asleep maybe 3 times.
What else have they done? You didn't like Hail Caesar?
No.
Hail Caesar gave birth to a star, though. Han Solo came out of Hail Caesar from that performance.
Yeah.
Well,
I was going to say Channing Tatum, he was already a star in my eyes.
Yeah, Aiden Emmerich. Am I pronouncing his name right? I think it's Aiden Emmerich. I'll look it up. But I have faith. And also the Coen brothers wrote it, but Clooney directed it. And Clooney is a very underrated director.
Yeah.
Very good.
Also, and Alexander Payne making a comeback.
Downsizing.
With Downsizing.
Looks fantastic.
Here's what it looks like. It looks like it could either be fantastic or it could be awful.
Do you get a really eerie feeling watching the trailer?
Yeah.
This movie
could be really dark.
It's so off-putting. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a weird sci-fi, they're all gonna die or something. I don't even know, but knowing Alexander Payne, like, nothing crazy will happen, and it'll just be a film about relationships.
I went home.
Yeah, let's hope it's not The Descendants,
though. Descendants.
Not a Descendants fan.
Yeah. Gave birth to a star, though.
Yeah.
Shailene.
Shailene, indeed. All right, let's get out.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, that's it. Thank you for listening. Thanks to John. That was awesome. Thank you to Jennifer Lawrence. Thank you to Darren Aronofsky. Thank you to Javier Bardem. Thank you for God writing the book of Genesis. That was intense. That was a lot. But anyway, thank you for listening. Have a good one. Stefan, hit him with those sweet, sweet tunes.